Today we sit down with Pastor Caleb Bassett, Chairman of the Technology Subcommittee for the Hymnal Project. He shares the many highlights of the recently introduced Service Builder product. We're so happy you decided to join us. Enjoy the show. Wells Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 672, recorded on January 11th, 2022. My name is Martin Spriggs, and Wells Tech is a show about technology and ministry and finding where those two intersections are. And joining me as usual in 2022, as she did in 20, I don't know how far back we have to go here, Sally, but for a long time, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally. Welcome to 2022.
Thank you, sir. I'm happy to be here joining you. I think 2022 is one of those years that was beyond my calculation when I was a kid. You know, when you're a kid, you think, oh, I'm going to make it when I'm 35 or whatever, and you figure out what year that'll be. But I'm past it now. I'm just like not believing how fast the years are flying by.
Yeah, I can remember thinking 2000 was a big number, you know, that lived so long in the 1900s that 2000 seemed like a long ways away. And now that's a long distance in the future.
Yeah, in the past, right? We just bypassed that ages ago now, it seems. It's crazy. But yeah. Blessed to be here.
Yep. How's 2022 treating you so far?
Off to a good start. We're healthy and actually a little bit fatter and happier with all the Christmas goodies we digested, and all is well. We're a official ping pong family now because we got a ping pong table for Christmas. So that's been a lot of fun.
Super. That's fun. We played a lot of ping pong in my youth. Neat. I'm happy because we welcomed a new employee to the staff. We've hired a security analyst who will be helping us in some of the schools with some of their security efforts. Big, important topic these days, probably in the news all the time, but we're really happy to expand the staff, and you'll be hearing more about that in the future, I'm sure. So 2022 off to a great start. Sally, I'm really excited about this first show of the year too, because we had a tremendous interview. Late last week, we were able to convince Pastor Caleb Bassett to join us. Caleb is the chairman of the technology subcommittee of the Hymnal Committee. I also serve on that committee, so we've been working together for many years now on this project. And a big milestone for the Hymnal Project was the release of the Christian Worship Service Builder. It's kind of the centerpiece, the crown jewel of the technology efforts. And he was gracious enough to spend a nice amount of time going through the highlights. And I think if you're even a modicum of interest in the new hymnal and some of the things it brings to the table, this is a great chat we had about how this is really going to benefit congregations and others. So why don't we go ahead and replay that interview, and we'll come back and chit-chat a little bit about the good stuff that Caleb shared with us. Joining us today, we have Pastor Caleb Bassett from Redeemer Lutheran Church in Fallbrook, California, and also the chairman of the technology subcommittee for the new hymnal. Welcome, Caleb. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Martin. Hi, Sally. I'm glad to be here today.
Really great for you to take the time with us. I know it's a busy time of year, and you've been busy with hymnal stuff as well, but that's why we wanted to talk to you this morning. Maybe first of all, for our audience's sake, give us a quick rundown on Caleb Bassett, your ministry positions, hymnal committee roles, et cetera, et cetera. Anything you want to share?
As you said, I'm serving out in California. I've been here since I was assigned from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary in 2010. And over the last several years, I've been serving as the chairman of the technology subcommittee for the Wells Hymnal Project. And with that also came a role on the executive committee. So I got to be a part of the decisions at that level, but also at a particularly focused level on the technology work. And our role as a subcommittee was basically to develop both tasteful and functional technology to enhance and support the utility and overall effectiveness of the Christian worship line of resources. So we had that as our target, looking at ways to provide tools that are just kind of handy, but also fit well with the nature of worship, that they, I guess, play well with the aesthetics of it also.
So what was it about your background that you think made you well suited for this role that you've been in for 7-8 years at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question. I kind of attribute it probably to our synod's kind of broad-based worker training, the liberal arts emphasis that I, you know, had sung in choirs and taken music classes and piano classes at Luther Prep, and sort of knew my way around some of those core musical concepts. We learn about worship at the seminary, but then as a sort of a side vocation throughout high school, college, and seminary, I had pursued various projects related with technology. I worked in our seminary library on a lot of technological projects. I've built websites and databases. And so that, I guess, skill I cultivated over the years, combined with that broad-based liberal arts education, made it to where I could kind of wear those multiple hats in this committee and then draw in members of the committee who have more focused, specialized skills in those areas. We had members of our committee who work full-time in the technology sector, and we also had some called workers on that committee who were musicians, and I'm not a musician. So that, I thought, brought a nice mixture of insights into the committee. And Martin, you were part of the committee too. So you recall how that those strengths came together that way.
Yeah, very nice blend. And I think you were very well suited for the role. So thanks for your service there too.
Thanks for saying that.
Yeah, I'm thinking my Wells Tech heart is singing here, because that's a good combination. We like that. We were excited, particularly the week between Christmas and New Year's, because something really big happened that a lot of work of your technology committee has gone into, and that was the release of the Christian Worship Service Builder. Why is that a big deal, Caleb?
Yeah, well, I'll say for me, it's a big deal because it means we're one step closer to the end of my service on the committee. You know, so one more thing out the door, and the, you know, the finish line is in sight. But I'd say that kind of in jest. But in reality, it's a big deal because Christian Worship Service Builder has really been our marquee effort, kind of our main and biggest effort. And for a lot of congregations, the hymnal, even though it was out in print a couple of months prior, the hymnal, in a sense, wasn't released for their uses until there were till our digital platform was ready. So it really does bring the hymnal and the Psalter kind of fully into public use in all its various formats. So that's, I guess, the high level way of looking at what a big deal it is. It's just a major milestone in the release. But then it also represents, I guess the way I kind of describe it is, it's a pretty big paradigm shift in the way congregations are going to plan worship and access worship materials. And I think one way to think of that is that it's the power of a system that's centralized and data-based, a single repository that everyone is sharing. And that brings a lot of benefits. So on the one hand, here's an example. It brings benefits to the publisher side of things. And I know this isn't very exciting, but for the publishing house to have a way to bring the material out in such a I guess an effective way is a big move forward in the state of the art. And so, for example, in the first week of the product's launch, we got some really useful feedback about the formatting of one of the canticles in one of the main settings of the service. So this is something that's going to be used and printed you know, for years and years in hundreds of congregations Sunday after Sunday. And this feedback was really useful on kind of how the music was engraved and how it would appear on the screen and then thus in print. And we were able to make an adjustment to that piece of content, the way it was formatted, based on that really good feedback. useful, practical feedback. And the change was live basically instantly for every user. And there was really no practical way to make a change like that and have everyone benefit from it in the past. You would have to redistribute all the files. And that was done on CDs. That was the way it had to be done then. So now you've got that. This is one example of the power of a centralized system. But that's just from the publishing side. On the congregational side, everyone gets the same sort of practical utility that comes from that. And so I describe it kind of like this, that there's certain repetitive or time-consuming tasks in worship planning and production that are kind of collapsed into a single action in a sense. Now, there's actually more than one thing going on, but from the user's standpoint, it's like one thing, they did one thing, but multiple things happened as a result. So the basic example of this is you put a hymn in a worship folder. That work usually starts when a worship planner, often the pastor, decides to plan a particular hymn for a particular Sunday, okay? And then later, someone, often the pastor or maybe an administrative assistant in many cases as well, then has to look at the service plan, go and retrieve the appropriate hymn files that they've been managing and storing in their own sort of system, then crop or prepare the file for the worship folder. And then there's the whole thing of if it doesn't quite fit, you might have to crop it or split it or slice it into multiple files. There's all sorts of things people end up having to do. Now, when the worship planner enters that decision on which hymn to sing, so say the pastor plugs it into in advance a few weeks down the line into Christian Worship Service Builder, the software application also takes care of retrieving, preparing, and inserting that associated digital asset. So when he picks it up later or the administrative assistant picks it up later and they just drop those decisions into the worship or into the service folder, it just pulls the materials up. There's no more going to look for it and preparing it and slicing it. In fact, the whole matter of slicing is pretty cool, that if you want to say sing stanzas 1 through 4 and 6 and 7 of a 10 stanza hymn, you can actually select and unselect which stanzas you want. And Christian Worship Service Builder slices out the stanzas you're not going to sing. It handles page breaks really well with things. So that's just the tip of the iceberg, but that's where by connecting planning decisions to also the work of getting the files and preparing them, the software takes care of that. And so those actions are kind of collapsed into one step. And that's going to save a lot of time. And again, that's just the tip of the iceberg. That concept applies throughout the whole system. And so that's going to, I think, really profoundly impact the way folks plan and produce their services. And when you ask why it's a big deal, I think the biggest deal is probably this, and it's more conceptual, but I think everyone's going to see how it plays out in practice. This is software that's designed from the ground up to work with the way Lutherans worship. Everything I've been describing is software designed where someone said, well, how do Lutherans do worship and how do they make service folders? Let's make a tool for them. That's what's going on here. So we researched several popular online worship planning applications, along with a number of the most common kind of do-it-yourself systems that pastors and worship planners have invented kind of for themselves, things like Google Sheets, Access databases, Airtable, whatever it might be. And the fact is, all those software tools are designed for different purposes. So something like a spreadsheet and a database, it sort of works pretty well, actually, but the software is general purpose. It has to work for a corporate accounting department and for a grade school classroom, and you can manipulate it to do some worship planning. And then a lot of the online worship planning software specifically designed for worship planning is designed around a style of worship that consists usually kind of like you prepare a set list, you know, and the band might play a few songs to warm up. And then the audience kind of gets going. And then the preacher comes on stage. He might talk for 30 or 45 minutes. And there might be a set list of sort of songs the band plays on the way out. And so the concept that a body of believers might sing or pray together is kind of invisible to the design of those software tools. But Christian Worship Service Builder is a total contrast from that. It's not just powerful, but it's also specialized. So you get all the power that people were trying to get with existing applications, but specialized for how Lutherans worship in every regard, that we sing together, that we pray together, that we have this rich resource and tradition that we can draw from. And yet also with the flexibility to have it match our local settings and to stay up to date with new pieces of music that come out. And I'll touch on a bit of that later. So it fits the task better than anything out there. And if I'm honest, I think that's the fact that makes it kind of the biggest deal. That's where everything's going to flow from, that foundational concept.
So maybe we should pause for like the audience cheering and things like that right now. That's pretty cool.
Does kind of sound like a big deal, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And that's neat. And you kind of gave a nice description of its real core functionality. And maybe that is its killer feature, but we were going to kind of ask you, are there other things that you heard that, or maybe you yourself were salivating over saying, hey, boy, I can't wait until I get my hands on this particular feature or that, or any of those that stand out to you?
Right. So what we always talk about is just how quickly it handles a lot of repetitive tasks. And I covered that already. And so that's a big part of it. But then there's a bunch of other things that I think are really going to be awesome to use. So one is there's a really powerful search feature. So again, unlike the former distribution model where I would get access to the files, you know, I would buy the files, I would have to then kind of design my own search and retrieval system. But, you know, that would be pretty limited unless I, you know, populated a database with it, but that's a lot of work. You know, I never got around to doing that. I don't know how many people did. Here we're getting not just access to materials, but capabilities. So every available element has all this metadata associated with it. So hymns have authors and tunes and the meter and the key signature. You've got a scripture index, which was a hugely requested feature that's in the new hymnal that you can search by scripture. So if a worship planner has a particular sermon or reading, they want to find hymns that allude to that sermon text or that reading text. You can do all of that. So the search is incredibly powerful. You can dig in with, you can search by tune and different wildcards, and power users will learn quickly how to kind of rapidly find in this massive amount of resources the stuff they're looking for. So search is there. And I think another killer feature that folks are gonna, it's not immediately obvious it's there, but it's this whole other world of the software, which is this area called My Worship Resources. So there, congregations can build up their own library of worship resources, as the name implies. And the cool thing is all their custom resources benefit from all the tools that apply to the core hymnal content that comes with your subscription. So you can add congregational hymns you may have purchased from another source, and you can make sure they're organized the same way the rest of the hymnal is. You can make sure you know it's an Advent hymn, you know that you might even be able to add some of your own scripture allusions if you want to maintain some of that. Now there you're getting into having to do a bit of the work yourself, but over time you can add that whole library, custom orders of service, for example, school chapel orders, nursing home devotions, church meetings. And the neat thing is once you've put them in the system, they're there for your use for the rest of the time you have the software. So if you've done something once, you can easily pull it up again down the line. I can imagine myself, so we will often use certain gathering rites for seasons like Advent or Lent. Well, if I develop some of those, or I have a colleague who's developed them, I can put them into my system and they're there. And then the work of dropping them into the service folder is just as easy as anything is. It's just search for it, pull it up, click it, drop it in, and insert where you want. And so not only do I save some time just on the practical side of it, I get this whole library of my own custom resources as well. And I did kind of mention working with colleagues there. I think another kind of sleeper feature that's pretty killer is the sharing feature. Pretty much any element, whether it's whole service plans or individual items in your database, you can generate a share link, which you can then email or text or however you want, or put on Basecamp, whatever it might be, to a colleague or someone, whether it's, you know, I'm thinking of collaborating with other pastors. And then if I share a link with a colleague, they can open the link and it'll offer to import everything that I've shared with them right into their library as well. And it brings everything along for the ride. And when I was first exploring this feature, I was kind of asking, you know, I use the analogy of like a Lego set. You think of, you get the instructions for a Lego set, but you also need the bricks. And it'd be one thing to email someone a copy of the instructions for a Lego set or a Lego model. You also need the bricks. Well, in this case, it'd be like sending the instructions and the bricks. All the content comes along too. And this is all done under the copyright system with one license, that if it's perfectly fine to trade these files back and forth within the system, because we've built in a way to know and assure that when it's used, the copyright reporting is handled accordingly. And so the sharing feature is actually extremely powerful. And I think folks are gonna find that to be quite enjoyable in terms of sharing and collaborating. So in my mind, those are kind of the high level killer features that are, you know, aren't just the sort of, you know, the whiz bang, you know, look, I, you know, cut some stanzas out of a hymn or made a worship folder in a couple of minutes, kind kind of deeper level power user features that everyone will benefit from.
Cool. And I understand there is a trial. So if people aren't quite, they're more visual, they want hands-on, they want to figure out, you know, is this for me? Tell us a little bit about how that works and what they can expect through that process.
Yeah, good question. The free trial is, I don't think it's quite too good to be true, but it kind of feels that way. So there's no time limit to it. You know, it's not a 14-day trial or a 30-day trial. It's not like some free trials where you have to put in the payment information. If you forget to cancel it after 30 days, you get billed suddenly and you're a little frustrated. It really is free to use for as long as you'd like. The only limitation, all the content is there. The only limitation is you can't export it for printing. You can't download it. You can't kind of finally do that last step, because there you've entered into the world of publishing, and to publish something, you need the proper licensing to do it, the licensing to export it, the licensing to reprint it. So, you know, we're going to talk a bit about copyright later. Hopefully I've got a little bit about that. But what this means is, by following that system well, we have this whole umbrella under which we can access the content, try the software. So you have, there are no features are limited except the final step. So you could, in theory, plan a few weeks of services just to kick the tires. You could modify all the custom settings. You could even add things to the My Worship resources, see how that looks, see how that works. You can do all that without having to pay a penny to use it. In fact, in one sense, you can also just use the search feature. It's almost like a search index for the hymnal that you could use for free without even having a subscription. But as I said, it's once the rubber meets the road on publishing the material, reprinting it, that's when you run into the need for a paid subscription.
Excellent.
So tell us more about how it respects the move to digital in many of our churches. I think you've touched on that somewhat.
Yeah. So I'll talk about licensing a bit. And here I have to kind of say, it's we're always a little behind the curve on this. You know, licensing, for example, before the pandemic, it was a pretty big deal that we were developing a system that would automatically report your usage of copyrighted material to the appropriate licensing body. And what we've done is develop the software so that whenever you use something in a service, it automatically reports on your behalf to onelicense.net. And so we were really excited about that. That would take care of most congregations' needs for reporting. We thought, oh, that's great. There's another way to automate a common and repetitive task. But then live streaming took off in a big way in the pandemic. So now another task congregations face is reporting not just their reprint usage, but their streaming and podcast usage. So on this regard, now we're suddenly behind the curve again, because Christian Worship Service Builder handles the reprint reporting, but there's no real way for it to handle your streaming reporting, because we can't assume that everything you print also gets streamed, and vice versa. For example, a worship folder doesn't print out the piece of music the organist plays during the offering, but congregations would be required technically to report that if the offertory was streamed online, because you've published or streamed that particular piece of copyrighted performance of that particular piece, but it's not in the service folder. So we don't know that it was used. And so there's no way to really kind of match up those two. So in that regard, we're already, you know, things move so fast that sometimes it's hard to keep up. However, to reflect that fact that so much is moving to digital, I think that this software and this platform does give us a powerful, efficient, and practical way with working with all sorts of digital files. That's a whole world of just, this keeps ballooning how many more files we are working with, copies of hymns, alternate settings. We buy more stuff online. We drop it in. There's so much there. And so to have a system that really is designed around managing that is going to be pretty great. And instead of everyone working on their inventing their own system, we have a shared system designed to meet most of the needs of most congregations. And so then if a congregation needs further workflow processes, they can develop them to pick up where Service Builder hands things off. Another way I think it can help with the move to digital and a lot of digital collaboration, I guess, maybe, is it's designed for multiple users to work on worship plans. So you can have more than one user in your organization. So you could have a pastor dropping in hymn decisions. You could have a choir director putting in to the worship plans the choir pieces, and maybe, you know, for instance, that's another example of My Worship Resources A lot of choir pieces might have a congregational refrain or something, and that could be dropped into Service Builder. And then the choir director puts that into the worship plan when they've scheduled it. And that for a lot of congregations will be enough. Just everyone log in and work on the same worship plan. But it also works that if you need something a little more full featured, you can just copy the URL for a worship plan. It's designed to be a permanent, unique URL. And you can drop that into something like Asana or Basecamp or Trello, and then assign tasks related to a particular worship plan. So maybe you would use Basecamp, for instance. You could put a task that says, dear choir director, please put in the selection for such and such day. Here's the link to the service plan, and off you go. So that I think helps reflect a bit of the move to digital collaboration, digital management, and just having everything in a handy, self-contained system designed for digital work.
Maybe just a quick point on pricing. Is it a per user price then, or do you have unlimited people that you can share with?
Right. So there's no limit to the number of people you can put in. I mean, I guess
awesome.
There are some limits if you came and said you had 10,000 users. I don't know if it's equipped for that, but but no one has that. But the point is the licensing is based off of the congregation's worship attendance. So if a congregation has worship attendance between, I'm not going to quote the right numbers, so you have to look it up yourself, but it's something like between 400 and 600 on an average Sunday or an average week, there's a pricing tier based on that. So it's proportionate to the amount of use that's taking place with the material. But yeah, you can put as many users as you need within that organization.
Awesome.
Before we jump off of digital, you want to speak a little bit to projection? I know that's a asked for feature in these systems, and I know a lot of our congregations are doing that, maybe not replacing print, but in augmenting it. The use of screens, how does the tool help in that respect?
Right. Yes. So any of the features that are used to generate worship folders, it will at the same time be producing a presentation view as well. So whatever you add into your service plan, when you can go to a bulletin view and you can see it, how it would appear in print, and you can edit and work with it kind of the way you would work with, it looks like using Microsoft Word, basically you're working in a document view. And then the same thing happens when you go to the presentation view. It looks like you're working with a slide deck, kind of like you might see with PowerPoint or Keynote. And then you can make adjustments there. And I should mention too, that there are just like word processors and presentation software, you can set up style guides and style templates so that you can quickly apply different styles to them. So practically speaking, that might mean you could generate a large print version of the service and a regular print version. That could be two different templates. You can do different styles customizations in the presentation view as well. Out of the box, it comes with a very plain vanilla template. The idea is that congregations can then adjust it to their own needs. Mm-hmm. Then you can export to various formats. For print, you get Word and RTF, I believe. And for presentation, you get PowerPoint. I think it's MediaShout is the other one. And and so from there, the way I envision the workflow is that there the software, Service Builder, hands off to something that's more capable for the job. You would put it into Word to maybe add your final touches, maybe run a couple macros, or maybe add your announcements at the end, whatever it might be, and then send it off to your printer. Same with the PowerPoint view. You could then maybe add some further styling, maybe apply a further style template, maybe import it into other software platforms that are commonly used. I know there's MediaShout. I think ProPresenter is a big one too. That's not available now. But as the other neat thing is there's a whole system set up to further develop the software. So if users have feedback on things like basically that'd be a good one right there. If they say, I really need ProPresenter, file that with the support team, and that goes into the product feedback system, and it can end up working its way into the product pipeline down the line if it's a feature that has enough interest. So yeah.
Interesting.
Probably worth a quick mention that there's a sorry, that there's a knowledge base, and that's where you can submit your request as well. So there's a lot of documentation to support all the things that you've been describing for us.
Mm-hmm. You can also contact the support team. So you can get, real life human interaction with the support team, answers to your questions. That's all there and available.
Excellent. So what's missing? You talked a little bit about, we're a little bit behind the curve on some copyright issues. Are there things coming, or what does the future look like here? What are we working on yet?
Right. Yeah, good question there too. So one thing that's currently missing, I would say, is there's some content that's missing. It's kind of the perennial headache of digital copyright licensing. And I want to hear mention someone specifically by name, and that's Christine at Northwestern Publishing House, who is the permission specialist. And I want to say that she has an incredibly difficult, complex, and probably rather thankless job of securing mm-hmm. copyright permissions across literally thousands of pieces of content distributed by hundreds and hundreds of different copyright holders, many of which usually have different licensing requirements and processes. It makes my head spin even imagining how I would tackle such a task, but she's done it and done it diligently without complaining. And it's really quite amazing that it's even as far along as it is when one understands just the complexity of it. So she worked for months to get all the print distribution rights for everything in the printed hymnal and Psalter. And since that got out the door, then she was able to turn her attention to working on securing the digital rights. So what's now missing is it's a decent sized list of hymns and psalms that we temporarily do not have permission to distribute. And temporarily is the key word. The good news is that we have every expectation that virtually all of the things on that list will become available. And the projection is actually probably within a matter of weeks. It's not that we have a no from the copyright holders. It's that we just don't have the contractual process completed yet. Maybe they haven't written back, or maybe there's something pending. Maybe their legal department's looking at it, various things like that. But it is underway. And my understanding is that almost everything will be available within a matter of weeks. So what happens now is if you go searching for it, it shows up in the list, but you can't view it, and you can't drop it into worship plans or print it. There is a small list of some hymns and psalms where the copyright holder has already said no. They simply won't budge on digital distribution, no matter what we say or do. So there'll be a small number of hymns and psalms we cannot legally distribute in a digital format. We've tried to explain to these copyright holders how kind of regressive that approach is, but in the end, you know, they've got the decision because they own the intellectual property. So that's what's missing. Most of it's coming soon. The other big thing that's still coming in terms of features is something called Christian Worship Playlist. That's the successor to HymnSoft. It's going to be an add-on module that will give Service Builder users the ability to export MP3 versions of the hymns and psalms in a particular service plan for use as an accompaniment for congregational singing where a musician is not available. And that work is ongoing for two reasons. One, the volunteers who are producing the recordings are still working on it. Big undertaking, and audio playback files are yet another copyright process. So when Christine gets the permission set up for distributing the digital files in for printing and projection, then we'll take up the work of the playback. And so the current estimate is first quarter of this current year, 2022, but that's about as much detail as we have on that. That's the other big thing that's coming down the line, and a lot of folks are looking forward to that as well because it's a very practical tool.
And I'll just say kudos to both of you guys. Obviously, Caleb, you've led the charge on this technology committee work, and we as a synod appreciate and applaud what's here now and what's still to come. What about your committee work? Are there other hymnal-related digital products in the works?
Yeah, there's two. One is called what we're calling the Musicians Resource, which is a repository of, you know, as the name implies, is resources for musicians. And so the goal of that product is really, it's like a segmented storefront at NPH, kind of a sub-store that makes it easy for musicians to find and purchase what's going to be a growing assortment of specialized resources for adding additional grace and beauty to a congregation's proclamation of the gospel and worship. So for instance, a choir might find descants designed for hymns and Christian worship. A brass ensemble might find festival settings for a number of canticles in one of the settings of the service, and so on. And so the technology committee did research on that kind of product and developed a set of guidelines and requirements for the resource from a technical standpoint and kind of a user experience standpoint as well. We talked to musicians, you know, what if you're wanting to go shop for these things, what do you expect? And a lot of emphasis was on clarity, focus, and ease of use. And so we set up some UX guidelines there, and we've passed that on to Northwestern Publishing House for development and implementation. And we passed it on a few months ago. And my understanding is that things are progressing steadily, and I would expect the Musicians Resource to open up sometime this year, but I don't have a more detailed answer than that. I also know that another committee, subcommittee, did a ton of research on gathering candidates for those accompaniment resources. They gathered lists of, you know, brass settings, choir descants, guitar settings across this range. So there's I think, a list of a few thousand items that are candidate resources that will then go through the product pipeline at NPH. Again, the goal was to make that pipeline a little more streamlined for the not only the user, but the publishing house, so that we have an opportunity of maybe bringing hundreds of new resources over the coming years, so that there's this kind of new freshness of resource that can be added to congregations that have the resources to do such a thing, like musical resources. So Musicians Resource. The other one is our effort at developing a mobile application. And this is one where, like, as it stands today, we have a clear vision for the mobile application and a carefully planned and I think competent development strategy. The big task that remains in terms of bringing that plan to reality, aside from the development itself, is putting together a solid funding plan and a long-term financial support strategy. In other words, how we pay for it. So we recognize that we want something like a mobile app to be both spiritually profitable for those who use it, but it also needs to be financially sustainable so the product can stick around for a long time, God willing. And so that's the work we're right in the thick of these days. In fact, we have an important meeting later this month on the very topic. And so there's still some key decisions to make. It's not a done deal that we would have the mobile app. But as I said, we've got a clear vision for it and a competent strategy to get it done. We've had to put that third leg on the stool, the funding picture, together. And I think we'll know more about the prospects of the mobile app later this month or sometime in February. And if it all goes to plan, if it does go through, you'd be looking at that being released sometime at the end of this year, because the development process there would take, I believe, 6 to 9 months or so. So that's a bit more nebulous, up in the air, not a done deal, not a certain thing, but that's the other of our three pieces of work: the mobile application, the Musicians Resource, and Christian Worship Service Builder.
Excellent. Some Very stay good. Tuned and some stuff you can get your hands on right now. So great, great review, Caleb. This was awesome to give us the behind the scenes, as well as the, you know, why you should get excited about this. This is a neat thing and a nice time in our synod's history to be able to launch this with the available resources. And boy, there was just a ton of work. You know, thank you notes should be sent to every committee member. This is many of the people. In fact, most of the people serving are volunteers. They have day jobs, and they put in countless hours and still are on many of these things. So I don't know how many people there were, over 50, I'm sure, on, you know, all the committees, maybe more that were involved.
Yeah, that's
with
a good point that you mentioned, that there was the executive committee, but each of almost every member of the executive committee was representing the work of a subcommittee. And so I think the number was probably, I think it's well over 60 or 70 individuals have contributed in some significant way to the research of the Psalms, the hymns, the texts, and there's work on the accompaniment resources. There's a whole lot there. And that's, you're right, a lot of folks who deserve a lot of thanks. You know, I get to come on the screen here and talk about it, but I'm only representing the work that many, many others did behind the scenes, and they deserve a lot of thanks.
And none of these, none of these digital products would have been possible without, you know, almost all their work.
Right, precisely. Yeah. It's really neat to see it all come together.
Well, we've taken enough of your time, Caleb. Thanks so much for sharing that. Blessings on your continued work and your work in your day job as well, spreading the gospel there in Southern California. We won't wait another 7 years to have you back on. I'm sure there'll be some interesting technological things you're working on, whether it's hymnal or otherwise, that that our viewers and listeners would be interested in. But thanks so much, and blessings on your future ministry work.
Thank you very much, Martin. Thanks, Sally. Good to be here today.
Caleb, thank you for your work, and obviously for the time spent in sharing that good stuff. Very well prepared, right, Sally? I mean, that was good. That was a neat overview.
Well, obviously, it shows his investment and respect for the product. And I finished that interview with Caleb just fired up and ready to go buy it myself. You know, like I have the trial version, and I can see what a benefit it's going to be to our congregations as they tackle that big job of worship planning and reporting copyright things and all of that. So great, great work of the technology committee, and we thank you very much for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for those of you that are not aware of where to find all the great resources and things connected with the Christian Worship Service Builder, be sure to check out our webpage, wellstech.wells.net. We'll have links to different webinars and tutorial type videos. We'll have where you can go to sign up for the free trial if you're interested in kicking the tires a bit, and then where you can go to order it as well. And then finally, even if you aren't planning to subscribe to the Service Builder, you can make use of that lectionary calendar. That's a great resource showing you the various verses and hymns of the day for each of the Sundays, as well as all the festivals that are part of the Christian worship year. And so definitely check out wellstech.wells.net and look for all those great links.
Yeah, that freebie is great. Those of you that had been using the Google Calendar approach to that, we get questions on that fairly regularly. That's kind of where we're directing people to kind of get the latest and greatest. So take advantage of that. So all those links will be there. Good stuff. So let's move on to other segments of the show. One that we do on a regular basis is called News in Tech, where we kind of hunt around the tech industry for things that are of interest to us or maybe are interest to you for various reasons. And one that we stumbled across was news about Instagram, which is a product of Facebook. And Instagram has kind of remained untouched through the acquisition, and a lot of the changes that have happened have been positive ones. One that I don't think was super positive that now they're reconsidering, according to this article, is that home feed was kind of curated. So you never could really see it, at least recently, in a chronological fashion, which was a bummer because you weren't always assured that if you posted something as an individual or as an organization, that people would see it. So what they're doing now in a test scenario, which I think it sounds like it's a real possibility this will become the new normal, is they will have three tabs that you can use in Instagram. You have the home tab, the favorites tab, and the following tab. And on those, the home tab will be essentially the same thing as it is now. So the experience would be kind of based on algorithms that Instagram feels, you know, you're likely going to want to see this based on your likes and follows and those kinds of things. The favorites tab will be kind of a list of that you maintain, that you create on accounts that you don't want to miss seeing. So that could be family members, close friends, favorite creators. And then finally, the following tab, we'll see that much anticipated return of a chronological lists of posts from accounts that you follow. So if you want to make sure you're seeing everything in the order that they're posted, that's going to be the tab for you. So I think in general, that's a good thing. And from a content creator's perspective, or if your organization posts to Instagram, this might be a little bit more of a win for trying to make sure that your folks, your followers see your stuff versus letting Facebook/Instagram try to determine that. So I think this is in general good news. I think they've listened, and we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah, as a content creator, it's interesting how things are evolving over time. When you create content for a group or a special page that you have on Facebook now, you can go to the behind the scenes business suite, and you're able to post the content to both Instagram and Facebook at the same time. And mm-hmm. So they're definitely marrying the two together more, but I really like the idea of this return to the chronological feed. I think that's a wise move on their part.
Yep, absolutely. All right. So that's news in tech. We have another segment that we enjoy putting together, and that's called Wells Now. So not just news around the tech world, but what's new in the Wells world.
Well, and I'm really excited to share this one, Martin. This has to do with another podcast. And I know people that watch or listen to Wells Tech maybe are the type of people that would benefit from more podcasts in their feeds as well. So this one comes from our Wells Congregational Services group, and it's posted on their website, wellscongregationalservices.net. It's part of the Foundation Series, which we've talked about before, which is kind of a pulling together of all resources around the church year. So as you scroll it, you're going to see your see resources, because that's the church year that we're in currently. And then it's divided by the different seasons. So for instance, we're coming up on Lent. You can expand the Lent section and you can see things like promotional graphics and videos and worship resources, all kinds of things around Lent. But one thing that you'll find that's new there is something called the Preacher Podcast. And the Preacher Podcast is basically a group of pastors who are discussing the readings and preparing sermon materials around the readings for the different Sundays, and even Ash Wednesday is listed here, the different services that pastors prepare for, in this case, during the season of Lent. And so you're able to tune in and hear other pastors as they're making these preparations, discussing the things they're learning about the text, they're studying and that kind of thing. I think this could be a huge help to many pastors out there who maybe even those who are far away and don't have circuit type discussions around this or whatever. The podcast, Preacher Podcast, is available in all the different podcast locations. You can pick it up in iTunes and Stitcher and the Google Store. And you can tune in and prepare yourself with an additional resource related to your sermon studies. So check it out. Cool stuff that they're preparing for you.
Yeah. And I would think there's maybe even application for Bible students, you know, whether you are just interested in learning more, preparing better, or exploring information to go a little bit deeper from that week's sermon. So I don't know that it's just for preachers, although it's called the Preacher's Podcast. I think there's probably stuff there. They'll get into the Greek and Hebrew, but they will, I think, talk about things that might be beneficial too. So
Excellent. Good. So yeah, check it out. Let us know if you've listened. We'd love to hear some of your feedback on it and share it with other Wells Techers.
Excellent. Let's move on to picks of the week.
I'm up again, and I just came across a really good article from one of my favorite sites, Make Use Of. And this is just a quirky little thing because I'm an Excel fan that I just never knew about Excel and a way to get data into Excel. And that is actually using your phone in the Excel mobile app. So if you have a print copy of some data that's kind of in a spreadsheet, rows and columns kind of format, you can actually go into a cell and tell it that you want to insert data from your by taking a picture. And when you grant Excel permission to use your camera and everything, you can literally just point at a collection of data that's in rows and columns. The example in the article, they use like a calendar, and you can point at that, crop it out, make sure you've got the part of the photo that you want to import, and it will turn that into data in a spreadsheet miraculously. And I just thought that was super cool. I can imagine scenarios where you might have, let's say, old ledgers or something from your congregation, and you'd like to digitize it, get it into Excel, use it for some research project or for archiving or whatever. Your cell phone camera can actually do that for you. So just one of those little utility type things that's worth tucking away, being aware of it, and perhaps making use of it at some important time when you need to get a lot of data into Excel. So.
Neat. I'm assuming this just doesn't work for numeric data, but alpha characters as well, right?
That's correct. It just puts it in that cell type layout
right.
that it's picking up from the image.
Yeah, so yeah, structured data, columnar data. So very nice.
Exactly.
All right. My pick of the week is actually a hardware pick. I had one of my picks of the year for 2021 was the iPad Mini, and I just find it to be a nice format for what I use it for, which is mostly note-taking. It's easy to carry around in meetings. It's easy to travel with, et cetera, et cetera. But a companion that I purchased for it last year that unfortunately I haven't had too many occasions to use it because we're still not traveling a lot, but I anticipate it being a real nice asset accessory to the iPad mini. And that's just this mini keyboard. It's the ArcTech HB006, very catchy name. It's very inexpensive. I think it's about $30, but it's about the size, for those of you listening, it's about the size of two decks of cards put side by side, maybe a little bit wider than that, and not quite as thick even. So it fits in a pocket, a backpack, a purse. And when you open it up, you just flip it open, both sides flip open. So it opens really quickly, and it's Bluetooth, and you simply pair it with your device. And it has the ability to connect with three devices. And it charges with a micro USB cable. And I just using it at home here in my home office to try it out. It seems like it's got a really nice duration on the battery life. The keys, you'd think this would be pretty small, and it is. I do prefer smaller keyboards. I don't like those keyboards that have, the big number pad on the right-hand side. That I think that just gets the mouse too far away from the center position. So I kind of like the smaller keyboards anyway. But if you compare it to like an Apple keyboard, it's probably hard to see with the background here. It's only maybe a inch shorter than that. So by all accounts, it's really not that bad. And I would say, yeah, it's going to take a few minutes to get used to the typing experience. But once you do 5-10 minutes down the road, it's fine. So this would be for somebody who wants to travel real light, maybe take it to a meeting, whatever. But the ArcTech HB006 is a Bluetooth keyboard is not a bad addition to the bag if you want to travel really light. It has a Windows key if you're on a Mac, or for the iPad that would take the place of the Command key, for instance. But it has it's basically got all the keys and the function keys, and so you're really not missing out on anything. It's got the arrow keys in the bottom right, so not a bad solution at all if you're looking for just a tiny little keyboard. It is actually smaller than the iPad itself by quite a bit. Sure. So.
iPad mini.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. Did so I say iPad? Small. iPad yeah. mini. Yep. So it's a nice, I think it's a good value. So far so good.
Okay. So I'm going to age myself, but we talked about the passage of time. I think you would make Maxwell Smart really proud as I watched you unfold your keyboard. You could be right there on Get Smart with Max and Aiden.
Yep. Some things never change, but this is, this is actually, it's nice metal. It's not plastic even. So I like it.
Cool.
All right. Let's move on to ministry resources. And I ran across an article that I thought was worth sharing on Church Tech Today, one of our favorite blogs, entitled Three Proven Ways to Seamlessly Promote Recurring Giving. In our congregation, we put out a series of encouragements at the end of the year for kind of year-end giving. And now at the beginning of the year, we're trying to encourage recurring giving, and online recurring giving is really the way to go. And many of our congregations have this set up, and this article kind of talks through not only the motivation for giving, and they do a pretty good job of that, but they talk about three proven ways to seamlessly promote recurring giving. So include a recurring option on every giving page. So as a default, rather than a one-time gift, default to the monthly or recurring gift is one of their suggestions. Use your email to draw attention to recurring giving. So not necessarily to the encouragement to give, but the encouragement of how to give and how easy it can be through recurring giving. And then finally, tip number three, use QR codes to streamline the process. So point a QR code at the printed newsletter or a screen or whatever, and you have a quick way to get right to the right page. Just in general, they're saying make opting in as simple as possible. So quick little article. I think they have some good links here and some good suggestions. They also have a related article about where'd it go? Cash, you got 10 useful end of year giving campaign tips, which are probably worth considering all year round. So I think they've got a nice series of articles on giving, probably worth checking out.
Very good. I know that is something that's changed over time, kind of recurring theme here today, but I can't imagine congregations not having this option now, especially with the pandemic. I think everybody has moved this direction, but having it and making it work for you are probably two different things. And I think this communication key component is very important.
Yeah. We have not returned at our church yet to passing the collection plate. So we have plates at the back and the front and at the exits and those kinds of things. So recurring giving has, you know, skyrocketed in our church, which is a great thing. And recurring giving along with it. And I think that in part has helped kind of even out the giving flow, which is really helpful for budgeting and makes things a lot easier to move forward with, knowing that there is a steady stream, you know, of income coming in to support your ministries. Community feedback's next, Sally.
Yep. And we heard from Pastor Jeremy Belter. Jeremy is in a mission congregation. Let's see. Shepherd of the Valley Candelas. I'm not sure what state that's in. But anyway, he was asking about bookkeeping options. A mission church, maybe being able to auto deposit for paychecks, different things like that. And we are fortunate to have at Wells, a chief financial officer who's in the know about such questions. And Kyle Egan, our CFO, responded and basically recommended QuickBooks as probably the best option. Kyle writes that, let's see, let me find the right place to start. For most congregations, we normally suggest QuickBooks for most bookkeeping purposes due to its adaptability to various organization needs, relatively low cost compared to other options, its ability to keep your transactions, records, and business contacts organized, and the wealth of resources that you can access through their help portal. Also, the fact that this particular mission congregation is going to be tied to Mother Church's payroll through QuickBooks gives you another reason as a mission congregation, just consistency between what the parent congregation is doing and what the mission congregation is doing for record transactions and things like that. So great recommendations. I think there's possibly other people that kind of specialize in this. So if you have specific needs, we might be able to offer or share with you some contacts and things like that if you need help. But yep. Thanks for the question. And thanks, Kyle, for the answer.
Yeah. Just to give Candelas its due, it's in Colorado.
So there you go.
Not sure where in Colorado, but I would assume somewhere in that Denver area. So awesome.
That's a pretty place.
All right. Let's close things out. I am looking forward next time to welcoming back two of our favorite people, Rachel Feld and Jason Schmidt, to talk about some education conference stuff. We do have a conference coming up. Sally, tell us a little bit more about that and how to maybe find out more.
It is the Wells Education Conference, National Education Conference, happening this summer in Pewaukee. And I think dates are like June 22nd through 26th, somewhere in that range. We've announced our keynotes and our presenters. There's a full amount of information out there at wellsedconference.com. So if you want to start making your plans, we are on the verge of releasing the registration form. So folks can get registered coming up very soon and also make their reservations. at the lovely Ingleside Hotel in Pewaukee, where there's a water park for your family to enjoy and special pricing for the rooms, of course. And so we'd love to have you join us, and we'll talk more about that, like you said, Martin, next week or next time we record Wells Tech. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those of you that have been to the Ingleside before, we had our Wells Tech conference there in 2015, I want to say now, a long time ago. They've renovated it by a good shot, so it's a nice experience there, and I think people will enjoy the time there. So mark that on your calendars. Sally, if people want to contribute to the show, give us some feedback, whatnot, how would they do that?
Well, that's a great question, Martin. We have a website dedicated to Wells Tech. It's at wellstech.wells.net. You can find all the episodes there going back. This will be the 672nd one. So all that history is there. In the top right area, you'll find links to all our social media, and you can comment on social media or right here on the website. You can also send us a voicemail with the link in the right margin. So we'd love to hear from you, get your feedback on anything we discussed today or on new topics you'd like to hear us talk about on Wells Tech.
Excellent. We don't say this very often. We probably should do it more, but if you have a chance, leave a review or a like on your podcast player of choice, whether it's Apple Podcasts or whatever, on the show. Obviously, the more ratings, the more positive reviews that are out there, maybe the higher we might land in the rankings, and more people might be able to see this and take advantage of that. So if you have a spare 2 minutes today or whenever, and you enjoy the show, please let your podcaster know that through those ratings, rankings, or however that's done in your podcast player of choice. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for listening. It's a neat thing to know that the time we spent is well spent, and that you're finding some value out of it. So hopefully you will tune in a couple of weeks, and until then, have a blessed week. Bye-bye.